Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Hey there, how are you? Steve Jones Show, Tuesday, April 30th, 2019. Wow, after today, one-third of the year in the hopper. Cruising right along, Sean Carey. Steve will be in the Sunbury Motors studio in just a sec. Sunbury Motors, Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai, North 4th Street, Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on the strip, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Our email is stevejones at wkok.com. We're on social media. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle at stevejonespsu. And you can listen to our podcast when you subscribe on iTunes, Apple Podcast app, Google Play. In the search bar, just type in Steve Jones Show. Hit subscribe. We'll send the shows right to your mobile device. You can listen to them anytime, anywhere. And you always have access to 3 months of shows by going to the podcast archive page at stevejonesshow.com. Penn State men's head basketball coach Patrick Chambers will be joining us, and also we'll look back at the NFL draft, Steelers-wise, and much more with Neil Coulong, the senior editor from the NFL Wire Network. With you live till 5, then we'll have the late-day news roundup at 5:06. Matt Catrillo back at the anchor desk this afternoon. And then 6:30 this evening, we'll be on deck as we get back into Phillies baseball tonight on 1070 AM after the Phillies played 17 games in 17 days. Had a day off yesterday, and now looking for their fourth consecutive win as they take on Detroit tonight. First of a quick two-game set, the Phillies won the final three of the four-game weekend set against the Miami Marlins. And despite scoring 12 runs on Saturday, the Phillies' offense has averaged just under 4 runs a game and hitting only .228 over its last 12 games. But for the first time in franchise history before May the 1st, the Phillies have three players with at least 20 RBIs. Rhys Hoskins with 23, Michael Franco with 22, and Bryce Harper with 20. Vince Velasquez gets the ball tonight for the Phillies. Nice surprise so far, 1-0 record with an ERA just under 2 in 4 starts. He has not allowed more than 2 runs in any start, but has only lasted once past 6 innings. Vince's last start was last Wednesday. He allowed 3 hits in 5 scoreless innings against the Mets. He struck out 6 and walked 3. And since starter Zach Eflin went the distance on Sunday, the Phillies' first 9-inning complete game since September of 2016, the bullpen will enter this series very well rested. Now, for the Tigers, they have been struggling. They come in with a record of 12-14. Hey. Tyson Ross.
Casey Mize.
Yeah.
Casey Mize in Altoona last night, the number one overall choice in the draft, it throws a no-hitter. First time out.
Very nice.
Yeah. Feeling good. Feeling good. So you got the Tigers, huh? In town? Very nice. All right. We have a jam-packed show today. It was great to have Adam Purdy on yesterday. You know, it was great to talk to what you would consider to be an encouraging teammate.
I heard the entire interview live on the stream.
He's a great guy.
He is a phenomenal gentleman of integrity.
Yes.
Had a golden opportunity to clear the air on the Purdy team, Sunbury Broadcasting team situation for the Truman H. Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament 1 week from tomorrow, Susquehanna Valley Country Club. Afternoon flight's going to be phenomenal. Sold out with our both teams involved.
Yep.
Looking for the complete breakdown as to how you ended up on the Purdy team, but did not catch any official clarification.
No, there's no clarification at all. Okay, no clarification.
Just waiting for the definition of the
no.
Purdy
right.
pounce and the Purdy pluck and pounce.
I believe that we have obviously a smart group of business people who saw an opportunity and took advantage of it.
Yes.
And when the guy that they poached, all right, and the guy that let him go said, no, that's okay, I'll carry them instead. They'll find out differently. It's going to be a very long day for that group. Because suddenly they're going to sit there and they're going to say, oh, but I thought you said you could help us.
I'm just looking going into this that Sunbury Broadcasting awesome twosome of Greg Wetzel and Craig Fogle.
And they are big-time players.
Yes, I'm just concerned that our buddy El Sudaroni is going to just ride on their coattails and just, you know, by the third hole, just mail it in.
And now you have just explained the entire career of that dude. All right, so... You summed it up perfectly, I thought.
I've told him since March to get out there. Just one round. Just get out there for your health. Just get out there once and just get limbered up so you're good
health.
To go. Yeah.
Health?
Yeah.
Okay.
One day where he'd get 10,000 steps in, so. Right?
There aren't that many at the mini golf course.
Right.
You can't take 10,000 steps at a mini golf course.
Oh, it's true. And we'll have golf carts, too, so I didn't think of that. So, yeah.
Yeah, we'll have carts. No, yeah. It's fine. All I know is after all this talking I've done, we darn well better win. I put us in a bad spot. I put us in a very bad spot.
All you got to do is make one phone call to another golf partner of yours, and all he has to say to you is, you got to beat these guys, and you're good. You'll be ready to go through a brick wall.
Actually, I do get that call. Look, we can't lose to these people. I got it.
You'll channel your inner hammer first tee next Wednesday afternoon, and you'll be talking with Adam's Uncle Craig, Adam and Steve, and you'll share that battle cry, and boom, you'll be rip-roaring and ready to go.
We cannot lose these people. What I'm going to do is I'm going to take a picture of them and go, see this group? I say, cannot lose this group. All right. There are going to be three more bowl games in 2020. Did you see that?
So that's now, what, 43, 44?
It'll be 43. Now, this is 2020, not this year. Okay? So...
Are all of these new ones owned by ESPN?
That I don't know.
That's weird. That's weird. Just with our bowl conversation year in and year out, that's really weird. That was the first question I would ask.
The three are Los Angeles in the new stadium, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and the other one is going, they already have the conference set, ACC versus American Conference, Fenway Park. Boston's going to host a bowl game. After Christmas.
Call that the Beanpot Bowl, but then again, that'd be a little too, you know, that's not to be confused with the Beanpot hockey tournament. So.
There'll be Fenway in the name somewhere. Maybe the Fenway Bowl. Sponsored by John Hancock. That'll mean that there will be... Now, the college football playoff makes it 43. I'm talking about the championship game. So 42 bowls, 84 teams. That means nearly 65% of the teams in FBS will be in bowl games in 2020. Wind swirling.
Yeah, but that time of year in Myrtle Beach in L.A., that's not too shabby.
Yes, but what are these bowl games in Boston?
Yeah.
The wind blows off the Charles River. Whoops.
When do you finally draw the line and then just get concerned that the... I mean, granted, some of the bowl games weren't all that pretty. I mean, like the Miami when they were in the bowl game last year in Yankee
right.
Stadium. But it just makes you wonder if there's now chance where more of these bowl games come 2020, if it's going to be more of a watered-down product.
Well, it already is. Right? It already is. But I'm not worried about that at all. That, you know, this doesn't bother me. Some people get really bothered by this. I don't get bothered by it in the least. If it's not your cup of tea, it's not your bag, don't watch it. If you want, if you're sitting there and it's a holiday week and you're looking around all of a sudden at 2:30 in the afternoon, hey, the Fenway Park Bowl's on. Hey, oh, it looks all right. I'll watch this. That's what it comes down to. You can watch, or you can elect to do something else. It's just TV programming. That's all it is. You know, nobody is telling you that the Fenway Park Bowl is determining the national championship. But if you have an ACC team, all right, so let's pick Syracuse against an American team. Let's pick UConn. No, if you're a UConn fan, you're going to watch the game. If you're a Syracuse fan, you're going to watch the game. All right. And maybe there'll be a few other people, you know, you're a Syracuse grad or whatever it may be, UConn grad, whatever it may be, you'll watch the game. And that's what it comes down to. Again, when you look at the numbers, every single bowl game this past year, all of them had more than 1 million viewers. All of them. It's TV programming. That's all it is. That's why I don't get too wound up about how many bowl games are. It's TV programming. That's what it comes down to. And guess what? People are watching. And last year, I'm trying to think what my schedule was last year. My schedule last year was I had a basketball game at Alabama. I had to go to Pittsburgh for a game on a Wednesday. I want to say the 19th. I then flew directly from there to Tuscaloosa and did a basketball game on the 21st.
That's right. Did the show live from down there for two days
down there.
That's right.
But then I came back and I didn't have another game until the 29th at the Jordan Center with UMBC, and then the next day, the 30th, I flew to Orlando, and I did the Citrus Bowl. And then I came back, and then I flew with the basketball team out to Michigan. But there was that period of 8 days between games where Christmas was a Tuesday, right? That sounds correct.
Yes.
So Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and then into Wednesday. I relaxed, you know, played with grandkids, and yes, I do. I'm the grandfather that gets on the floor and says, "Grandpa, let's play trucks." Okay, so Grandpa gets on the floor and plays trucks. And I'll do that, and then one by one they eventually all leave. And so I had some. It turned out it was a week where, because I had the bowl game all prepared, I was not, you know, I didn't have to do a lot of work. And I watched a couple of bowl games. A couple of college basketball games, but couple bowl games. Now, to me, that was entertainment. I was sitting there, I can't remember if it was this week or not, but watching the Cheez-It Bowl, for goodness sakes. And it was a pretty good game. I watched all of it. Yeah, what's the Cheez-It Bowl? Who cares? It's in Phoenix. It's at where the Diamondbacks play. And I watched it. Why? Because to me it was entertaining. It didn't really matter who was playing in the darn thing. It mattered who was playing in it because I've watched it. I remember watching the Alamo Bowl. I'm like, hey, it's a pretty good game, watching the Alamo. I don't care. It didn't matter to me. Gave me an option to watch, so I watched it. Take the Phillies. Phillies will play tonight. It's a good game. I'll watch for a while. It's one of 162. We're used to one of. Yeah, let's watch the Sixers tonight. Yeah, it's one of 82. Let's watch the Penguins tonight. Yeah, it's one of 82. Same thing with the bowl thing. That's why I don't get all worked up about it. How many bowl games and, the integrity of it. Oh, please. Yeah. Well, of course, we do know who does get worked up by that. Take a guess.
Oh, yeah, our guy.
No, he's your guy. He's the one that engineered the trade to get rid of me. Right. So he's your guy. You're going to have to make up your mind as to which group you're going to follow. Loyalty points come into play. We'll come back with more in a moment. News Radio 1070 WKOK. The original concept for that commercial was Limu and Suit. They changed up to Doug. All right. Everybody makes their own mistakes. Great to have you with us on the show today. 43 bowl. I don't get worked up about it. It's like, you don't want to watch it, don't watch it. It's not to your standard of a game, don't watch it. Well, it's kind of a, let's say, holiday weekend, holiday week, whatever. And then there's that, quote, little dead period between Christmas and New Year's. Yeah, some people have some extra time. Just hanging around. It's a good game. I think I'll watch that. They're all spread out. They're never against each other. That's how I look at it. It's just TV programming. If you want to watch a rerun of Apollo 13 on Ovation or whatever it may be, go ahead. All right, Neil Kulong next half hour on the Steelers draft. By the way, baseball attendance slightly down opening month. Oh, but not the Phillies. The Phillies are up 44% in attendance from March, April a year ago. 44%. And that number is just going to climb all year. I mean, the smallest crowd they've had this year is 34,500. That's the smallest crowd they've had. In Pittsburgh, they'd be having a parade. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth.
The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Neil Coulong in a moment. All right, so a friend of mine, the movie Avengers Endgame, of course, has just captured the imagination of the world to the tune of $1.2 billion over the weekend, including $350 million in North America. So this guy I know, I want to say it was on Friday, concocts an excuse to get his, I think the youngster's in third grade, to get his third grader out of school with the idea that he can get him to the movie and they can go together. You know how strict they are now about the ability to get a child out of school? So he concocted his whole excuse, the entire deal, to get him out and to get him to the movie. Now, for some of you, you're sitting there saying, oh, this is like the cool dad. And there are some of you saying, that's disgusting. That kid's going to end up over at the old Susquehanna Valley Mall. And we're going to be helping him out someday because he's sitting outside. Oh. I'm just telling you. With that, we bring in Neil Coulong from Pittsburgh. Neil, hello. How are you?
Class is a five-letter word, as far as I'm concerned. I'll tell you this, though, just to tag on to it. My dad or my brother took me out of school to go to movies all the time when I was growing up. I honestly, there was a point in time not too long ago that when people were talking about Game of Thrones or the Avengers, I wasn't sure which one was which. And there was a point that I thought they were kind of the same thing. So I'm not sure if there's really a correlation between, you know, future desire for you know, the following of pop culture and entertainment. But I'll say this, whatever it is I didn't learn in school that day was a lot less fun than the movie that I got to watch. So, you know, enjoy the experience. School will always be there. It never goes away.
Yeah. All right. So now let's get to what the Steelers did. After shocking the world and moving up, it doesn't matter who they picked, by shocking the world and moving up to 10, then they ended up with Devin Bush. What did you think of how it all played out?
I thought around 10, 11, 12, as I thought, that was about the point I thought they would make their move. And considering, it really, I think that the monkey wrench in the whole thing was Ed Oliver. Buffalo taking him at 9. I know that Denver said if they didn't trade out, they would have taken Bush at 10. I'm not necessarily sure I buy that. I think if somehow Oliver were to find his way to 10, which I never would have believed in a million years that would have happened. What a steal for the Bills. But I think if he was there, that trade would not have happened at that point. Maybe Cincinnati does something different at 11 then. But I think Denver liked the option that they had. And they made out like bandits, a great deal for John Elway. I'm not sure if Elway now has equity in Kevin Colbert's home or what, but a great deal for him to move down that far and to pick up Noah Fant along with extra capital and the quarterback that they need at some point here in the future. A great job by him, but it's the move the Steelers had to make. I really think that when you lay it all out, we talked about this last week as well. This really was the year that they had to move up. They had too many picks that probably weren't going to make an impact, and they were too far down the draft to get the kind of impact player that they needed at the position they needed to have it in the most. And Devin Bush turned out, I mean, a lot of people said it, he was pretty sought after. I don't think he would have lasted a whole lot longer. So
I agree with that.
If there's a price that has to be paid every now and again, you know, then there is. And that's what they had to do. And you can basically, you know, insert him in as the starter right now and hopefully shore up a significant hole in the Steelers' defense. I think that in and of itself makes the guys in front of him better. It makes the guys behind him better. It's going to make their coverage better. It's going to make their run defense better. And if that costs you a second-round pick, well, you know what? I think you got to do it. I think it was the right move to make for the right guy.
I think many of us feel that way. Look, you have an opportunity to get somebody that you just look around and say, you know what? He will make us better. You do it. That's the whole purpose of the draft. Getting 5,000 guys that may not help you is not going to do it. Getting a guy that can do it, yes. I mean, that's how you do anything. Now you go to the next part. It's a 7-round draft. How did they fare the other rounds?
You know, I really like Johnson as a receiver. Deontay Johnson, if you watch him, the way that he goes about himself pre-snap, the way he goes about himself in getting to the stem of his routes, his hands, you watch all of those things and you really see a very, very good football player. I'm not sure how high his ceiling is, and I understand that the physical comparisons to Antonio Brown are pretty easy to make, if not lazy. I'll say this, he is a much more polished receiver than Brown was coming out. He's a much more polished receiver than I think most of the receivers the Steelers have drafted. And I said this right after it happened. He is such a Steelers receiver. I'm not surprised they took him where they took him, because I think really, in the end, what they wanted was a third-round level receiver, somebody that they felt was capable of playing the game around that top 100 rookie spot. And he was probably the last guy who was there to do it. They pulled the trigger on it. I know a lot of people said that they took him early. There's a story, too, about how Tampa Bay, you know, kind of cursed out the Steelers for taking him because they were going to take him with the next pick. I can see why. He's a receivers coach's dream. He does a lot of things very well. He runs great routes. He's very disciplined. He knows how to get off the jam coverage, so you're not looking at a guy that needs elite size, strength, athleticism in order to get himself open. He just knows how to play the game very well. I think he's a great pickup. I understand a lot of people really panned the pick, were really upset considering, you know, it's a Mac guy in the third round and the Steelers hadn't picked for a while. But I think he's a great addition to that room. And I think there are a lot of different positions he's going to be able to play. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see what they do with them over the next 2-3 years.
All right, what you think about Zach Gentry? You want to talk about a big receiver? Zach's a big receiver. Can't block to save his soul, but he's a big receiver at the H-back spot, I guess. And then Benny Snell, who at least Gentry can catch. Snell really can't, but Snell is a really good downhill runner. So what did you think of those two picks?
Let's start with Gentry. That was the one I was surprised with. And you know what? It mirrored to me almost the exact feelings that I had when the Steelers took Jesse James.
Yeah.
Almost to the exact criticisms that I had of him, except I would say that James was more accomplished of a tight end than Gentry is.
Right.
What was the word on Gentry? He was a quarterback coming in. He was supposed to be the next Vince Young, and my thought was, well, he didn't come too far off then, I guess. just slightly. I'm not sure anybody would want to claim that evaluation now. I mean, he's not a good tight end. He really isn't. He's deficient in pretty much every area of the position right now. For him to go in the fifth round,
except for catch radius. I mean, he's got that.
Except the fact that he's 7'8", which is nice. Just, you know, sky the ball in the air.
Hey,
as long as he gets off the line of scrimmage somehow.
They have charity basketball in the offseason. It helps the club.
Yep. And that's how he's going to initially help the club, I'm sure. I thought that they would spend a higher pick on a tight end. Trading their second-round pick, I think, might have put a dent in those plans. And like it was with James back in 2015, I think the targets that they had before in earlier rounds, I think they all got plucked right before they had an opportunity to get him. And Gentry was pretty much the last guy on their list. They just took him because they absolutely had to get a tight end in this draft. Whether they got one or not, I guess,
right,
still
sure.
up for debate. But we'll see. You're exactly right. He cannot block. He does not know how to use his body for the position that he's playing. He's not functionally strong at all. It's probably because he's insanely long. Guys like that tend to not do too well in the bench press. And he bench pressed, he put up 225, I think like 11 times, and that's under his weight. I mean, you'd hope a tight end would do a little bit more than that. But then again, I mean, arms being as long as they are, those guys don't tend to bench particularly well. But you watch him, he doesn't have functional strength. He doesn't block well at the point of attack. He doesn't bend down very well. He doesn't seem to be very flexible. He's got a ways to go. They've got a lot of work they need to put into him if he's going to turn into anything. Flipping it over to Snell, what I like about Snell is what you see is what you get with him. I'm not sure there's much of a ceiling there, but I'm not sure I'm too bummed about the package that they have in front of him. That kid just runs hard.
Yes, he does. And you know what? Obviously, the only game I did with him was the Citrus Bowl, so that was the last game he played. To be honest with you, Neil, I thought in the fourth quarter, you talk about it's all relative, obviously. Everybody's tired at that point. So obviously he's less tired than everybody else. But the old he looks stronger in the fourth quarter, well, he did to me.
Yeah, the film that you watch of him, the big plays that he makes are those second half plays. And you know that reminds me of, and I absolutely hate to say this, but that's Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell closed out a lot of games for the Steelers because he was just in much better physical condition than everybody else. And the pounding that he took earlier in the game didn't impact him. He went harder and stronger than everybody else, especially at the end. He started to get that edge to him. Snell goes looks for contact. He wants to hit people. The spin move that he has, he's probably not going to want to do that after a couple days practicing with Vince Williams. But when he lowers his pads and he gets north and south, he's tough. He's tough. He runs like his butt is on fire. And I think he's a great guy to add to a very young running back room in Pittsburgh. And I think they want it that way. And I think he has a complementary skill that, not saying that either Connor or Samuel do not have, but if this is his fastball, if this is the one thing that he's going to do, if he's going to come in and get that third and one that Stephen Ridley failed to get last year against New Orleans, if he's going to hang on to the ball, which Stephen Ridley failed to do against New Orleans last year, if that's what he can do, I think you can take carries off of your primary running back's plate. And this is a primary running back who's been, basically he's had season-ending injuries each of his first two seasons in the NFL. He was on pace for over 300 carries last season. They have to find a way to lessen the load a little bit. And if it's going to be a short yardage guy like Snell, and yes, I understand the hands part probably, limits them a little bit when it comes to disguise and versatility on third and two. But Mean Joe says this all the time. When it comes to the game of football, the best teams win the situations they have to win. When you have to run for short yardage, you're able to run for short yardage.
Yes.
When you're able to pass for mid yardage, you can pass for mid yardage. You have to be able to line up and knock somebody on their back. And the Steelers have put an incredible amount of money into their offensive line. If that line can't get a push in that situation and the running back on top of that can't get yards, something is really, really wrong. But I think a guy like Snell will relish the opportunity to pick up 3 yards on third and two. And if that's less contact for Connor, who can ice the game in his own right, we've seen him do that. You put that together in a guy that doesn't need 15 carries a game either to be successful or to be happy. You get a guy that can just carry a couple times, both he and Samuels. You line that up over the course of the season, you might take off two games by week 11 on Connor and still have a very productive running game. I think it's a smart pick, and a lot of people disagree with me on that, but I like what he has, and I think he has a perfect complementary skill set for what this team needs.
Connor hasn't gone through a full season yet and not been hurt. Okay? He brings a lot of the same skill set to the table, so you feel like you keep going with that. So, last question. In the AFC North, where the Steelers have to compete and end up playing 38% of their games, which of those four teams got better? Which ones did not?
I think it's obvious Cleveland got better. I think Cleveland's gotten better the last 2 years because they really didn't have a whole lot of downward mobility left. but to Cleveland's credit, they made a lot of the right moves. I thought they had a good draft. I'm not nearly as sold on Greedy Williams as some people are. That's something we talked about last week as well.
Right.
The detriment to his game, or it makes him kind of a liability out there. I'm not going to stamp him an all-pro the way some people are already. He went in the second round for a reason, and if he wasn't the athlete that he was, he would have gone a lot lower than that. I don't think he's nearly as great a cornerback as people think that they are, and he's probably the best guy they got away from that draft.
Mm-hmm.
But they added a lot of great pieces in the offseason. They're going to be a very competitive team. Baltimore, they drafted a speed wide receiver mm-hmm. who's got a debilitating chronic foot injury.
Yes.
And they drafted a Frankenstein's monster wide receiver who can't turn left or right in any sort of smooth motion as their other receiver. They think they solved their biggest problem.
You consider that an issue? No, I'm just
Well, how about this? If I'm whoever's in charge of the Ravens draft room for the last 20 years, I don't consider it an issue.
Wait,
they
guy,
always have this problem. They
this guy sounds
fucking,
like that sounds like Derek Zoolander who can't turn left.
Yeah, it's basically he and Metcalf are exactly the same thing. When you have a turning radius of a battleship, you're not going to be all that effective as a receiver in the NFL. It's that simple. I don't get picking either one of them. I wouldn't want either one of my team. You can't run anything but a nine. That's all you're going to do on the field. And then Hollywood Brown, Lisfranc injuries are no joke. You know, modern medicine aside, Lisfranc injuries are no joke. You don't just get faster when you heal from that.
Right.
It doesn't just come back for you.
Right.
And if that kid doesn't have speed, he's going to die on the field.
Right.
So I don't think the Ravens got especially any better.
Right.
I think the Bengals probably got a little bit better.
But who can tell?
Again, I mean, we probably won't even know for however long. They're going with Dalton, you know, come hell or high water, that's their guy. They have the opportunity to draft Haskins. I really thought they were going to do that. I guess not. I'd probably, you know, Cleveland overall, I think, improved the most. I'd put probably Pittsburgh and Cincinnati in the same level, and probably Baltimore as well. Between the three of them, I'm not sure anybody's better than nine wins next year.
Yeah, and just one quick note I'll say about Brown. Okay. National semifinal hurt, he still played. I do give him credit for that. You know, his team needed him to play, he played. Hey, Neil, thanks so much. Appreciate it. And I, too, have the turning radius of a battleship.
That's what ended my career as well.
Thanks, Neil. You're the best.
You guys have a good one.
All right, Neil Coulong, USA Today. Patrick Chambers next half hour as we continue, brought to you by Sunbury Motors on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to have you with us. Patrick Chambers next half hour. We're going to get more on Mike Watkins deciding to come back for his fifth season. That's big for Mike. All right. Look, we can talk about the basketball part, and we will, but when you sit there and you know where Mike came from, I'm going to guess that the vast majority of you have never been probably anywhere near Mike's neighborhood. Nor would you want to. And has he had problems here? Yes, he has had problems here. But his ability, if he can get his degree, which he's on track to do, he can get his degree in August. Maybe he wants to do it in such a way where he can get it in December. I can't begin to tell you what that's going to be. Now, the basketball part, needless to say, he's going to really help. And I think what I'm expecting out of him is because when he'll start the season, instead of being 7 months removed from that knee injury, he'll now be 19 months removed. That makes a big difference. And it's not just going to be, well, you know, more stamina? Will he be better at the free throw line? Like, blah, blah, blah. You know, the usual, you know, simple stuff. It is, you know, it's a little more complicated than that.
Yeah, I don't want to say he had limitations when he got back into the lineup, but yeah, but coming into this upcoming season, he'll have much more power and strength right out of the gate.
Well, I mean, I understand the stamina part, but you know, you always get the simple, he's got to be a better free throw shooter. He's like, hey, thanks for watching the game. It's something that I think if you know the game, you're going to know what I'm talking about. Defensively, Mike's ability defense to be on the first jump was always there. No issue. What made Mike show the potential he had a chance to be special was his ability to boom and get that spring and be back on the second jump, and boom, get that spring and be back on the third jump. He didn't have either one of those last year, and it affected the play around the bucket at both ends of the floor because he only had enough strength to make one jump.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.